You're listening to What Were You Thinking? With Eric McCoy and Morella McCoy, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you are in the world. My name is Eric McCoy, and this is the show that is always wanting your input and your insight, and we want to know what you were thinking. And I am with my beautiful co-host,
Morella McCoy.
Thank you for coming. You're here anyways.
somebody's got to drive here, right?
Absolutely. So, hey, I wanted to, in 2005, I worked for a residential treatment facility on the peninsula in Newport Beach. And at this facility, I saw, sadly, the most devastating and actually deadly consequences of what our topic is of today, and it is enabling and codependency. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that the deadly consequences behind it is that we had typically in this facility, we had young adults, 18 to typically 20 the something. 20, 21, 22. And a lot of these, and again, we could call them kids, had been through many rehabs. Right. They were in, some of them 3, 4, 5, and this was back when it was cash pay. And so there was actually no insurance companies that typically paid for this. And we sadly had a death box. And this death box carried the files of those that had completed the program, mm-hmm. had left, and then somehow died. And it was usually a combination of the synergistic effects of alcohol combined with benzodiazepine or some other depressant. And we saw this over and over. We never had anybody die in the facility, but I thought about this a lot, and I do believe that this is a direct result of codependency, mm-hmm. Of parents that, and again, they're not looking at it in a negative light. These parents typically want to, they're caring about their kids. They love their kids. I want to help my children, but they're not allowing the kids to experience the consequences,
right?
And to ultimately learn from and ultimately make, the decision for themselves that, hey, this is what I want to do. Because again, I'm always, if I got my parent there, it's always, they'll always pick up my pieces.
I'll be taken care of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's actually what we wanted to talk today about, mm-hmm. Is codependency and enabling.
Sorry. I'm trying to put our show on so I can see if anybody sends us any remarks. So we're good. We're good. Okay.
And then we ultimately want to talk about the negative consequences, but obviously also the healing process, how we can ultimately move away from this. Obviously there are, self-help programs out there, mm-hmm. Al-Anon, mm-hmm. And Al-Anon teaches what is called detachment, mm-hmm. which is, to let go of our obsession with another's behavior and ultimately begin to lead happier and a more manageable life.
Right. Well, and I think that the first thing that we need to talk about, right, is what really is codependency? What does that mean, right? And how there is a difference between being codependent, enabling, and helping somebody. Mm-hmm. Are you helping them? Or are you rendering them from getting better because you're always helping them?
And ultimately, possibly killing them.
Also possibly killing them, absolutely. So I think...
Metaphorically.
Yes. Yes. So I think we need to kind of maybe delve into exactly what codependency is. And really what that means is... And again, I don't have my glasses, so I can't actually read the definition. But it basically is... your need to help somebody you love to the point where that's all you're doing and you don't care about you stop caring about yourself, mm-hmm. right? And this could be in a relationship, husband, wife. It could be parent to children. You know, it could be, I actually was found interesting, it could be from coworker to boss, right? So you're constantly trying to, you know, bail somebody out or put, you know, take him out of a situation.
And possibly insurance company for people going into rehab.
Yeah.
That we, like, we had actually brought that up when we were driving down here on that possibility of enabling, because we have people that have, you know, come into treatment that have been through 10 programs in the last year, and the I don't know necessarily how this works, but, you know, it almost looks like that.
Yeah,
you know?
It can look like that, for sure. But I think that, and again, we're going to talk a little bit about my story here in codependency, because not only was I an addict, a daughter of an addict, you know, a mother of an addict, but I was also was a big codependent enabler for the longest time. I mean, I would say my whole life until, you know, I started to really do some, soul searching on that. And you don't see it as a codependency. Right. You don't see it as that you're enabling somebody to continue a certain pattern. And, you know, the biggest thing that I started to realize was it being in a 20-year relationship with somebody and finally realizing that I was getting nothing out of the relationship except for being the caregiver. Mm. All I was doing was taking care of him, his needs. Who was I if I was not there bailing David out? Mm-hmm. Right? To the point where I did not leave him because of the fact that I knew if I left him, he would fall apart. It was just clear as day. I knew he'd fall apart because he couldn't take care of himself. So somebody had to take care of him. And that somebody was me.
And that's how you defined yourself almost.
You define yourself as being the one, like, I have to take care of this. Mm-hmm. I have to be the one who stays strong in this relationship, you know? And also the need to be needed, which is a huge codependency thing. We start to feel like if we're not needed, we're not worthy of being, mm-hmm. right? So So our whole lives become wrapped around this particular individual or individuals, right? And when you start to feel not needed anymore, you start feeling worthless.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about codependency as being a relationship addiction in that aspect. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I see a lot, you know, with people that get clean. Mm-hmm. You know, people go into rehab, they, you know, get off the chemical that they're addicted to, and then they delve into and jump onto and latch onto a relationship, latch onto somebody else.
Right.
You know, I become dependent upon somebody else. That's my new addiction.
Right.
This new person.
Right.
And that's a premise of codependency.
Right. And instead of focusing on themselves and getting better, they identify themselves better because, oh, I'm with somebody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you see this all the time in many relationships. And the one that I find the hardest to kind of break through that codependency enabling thing is a mother to a child or a father to a child. Mm-hmm. And I say mother just because I'm speaking on the mother side. But, you know, we saw that tremendously on my side when my oldest was, you know, in and out of rehab. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling you, yeah, he ran off again, but he's back and let's put him back into rehab. And, mm-hmm. and you know, you kept trying to help out. And at some point, I remember this clear as day, you're like, that's it. Mm-hmm. We're done helping him. And I was so angry at with you because I'm like, how do you expect me to stop helping my son? Mm-hmm. I did not understand where you were coming from. And to me, it was, I love my son to death. And I'm going to help him no matter what until he ran off the last time. Mm-hmm. That is when I realized I am not going to love him to death because I was going to kill him because every time he resurfaced, he'd come running to me, mommy would bail him out, and then he would break my heart all over again.
Mm-hmm. I almost think that's where that saying correlates with.
Really?
I'm going to love him to death.
Right. Yeah, it can definitely
I think it really kind of fits the picture. Mm-hmm. You know, I love this person so much that I'm going to love him to death. Mm-hmm. I love him to death, and then I'm going to help make that happen.
Right. So what happens when you're super codependent on somebody? You're the one who's the giver. You're giving them, this person, everything. You're lying for this person. There was some examples of, like, you know, say it's a husband and wife and the husband's an alcoholic and he's super hungover the next day. The wife is the one calling the employer to say, oh, you know, he's really sick and, you know, trying to cover up his addiction, right? And so you're, as the wife, you're bailing this person out constantly, constantly, constantly. And that becomes who you are. You're constantly, you're that person who's constantly helping that person to be able to get away with their behaviors, right? You see it with moms. You know, moms don't want to admit when their kids are doing something wrong, because then that looks like you're failing as a mother. Right. Mm-hmm. So for me to sit there and say, to tell the world, you know, that my son is a recovering addict, for the longest time, I couldn't say anything like that, because then I failed as a mother, because why would my son be on drugs? Mm-hmm. Right. Most moms and dads will take that responsibility on themselves. Right. And, you know, and again, you helped me tremendously through that, because it was, why are you taking responsibility for your child's choices? All you can do is teach them, guide them, and if they take another direction, that is not your responsibility.
Then you let them fly.
Then you let them fly until they fall like a little bird off the tree, didn't have the wings, you know, there. So how many of you out there are kind of going through this, now you're looking at your relationship and you're going, God, what does this person do for me? I'm doing everything for them. Is that who I am? Is their, how they live is putting the worth on me? Like, it, you know, I'm only worthy of being able to take care of this one person.
Well, and that's why when we look at, like, defining yourself, who are you as a person, right? Right. And so many people, I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm a...
That's a, you know, role that you play.
That is a role, right? That is, and that has nothing to do with who you are.
Right.
And I think people that fall heavily into this codependency, they define themselves by roles.
Yeah.
They define themselves by roles rather than really defining who you are as a person. That's
right.
Just a role that you play.
Right.
And, you know, in my book, Pain, Failure, and Misery Are the Stepping Stones to Success, I talk about this topic in one of the chapters, mm-hmm. that was, that I wrote a lot for families that possibly have lost people as a result of chemical abuse, or those that they don't know where their kids are. They're running around the streets. And I think in a lot of aspects, there's the same pain that's involved. The only exception is hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those that obviously have not heard the word that they have died. But what I kind of pointed out within this chapter was, and again, this goes back to what we were talking before about it, in the aspect of you have no control,
right,
of your kids. No control over anybody. And I created this acronym that I called Blame Me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Remember.
And the acronym is Because Love and Martyrdom Equals My Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And what I meant by that was, you know, you're not at fault, you know, and stop believing that you have control over another person,
mm-hmm.
You know, over a person's choices. And, you know, in this sense, this is what is known as the God complex.
Right.
Right. That, you know, when somebody believes that they have a God-like ability to get people to do something.
Right.
Even though we've talked before about God,
I was gonna say, the
greatest gift he gave us was freedom of choice.
Right.
Freedom to choose, right? Mm-hmm. But you did not decide this.
No, you didn't decide that life.
And you should not suffer.
Correct.
You know, for the decisions that are made by another person.
Right.
And that's what happens.
Right.
You know, is that, especially when we're going back to the chemical dependency, you know, is that, you know, the child or the kid or the adult, you know, how old they are, you know, people kind of, a lot of parents will say, oh, they don't love me, you know, mm-hmm. wives, even husbands, you know, look at this. And again, I don't think love fits in the equation with chemical abuse.
No, it really doesn't, because that's exactly how I felt with Alex was, you know, how could he do this to me? Mm-hmm. Right? He's the one in the addiction. But how can he do this to me? He doesn't love me. You know, he hates his mom, kind of thing. And so it was all on me. His choices were on me, and it was so detrimental to my well-being, right? But what I was going to say was, what happens if you are super codependent on somebody? You're the one bailing this person out all the time. Your whole life, your whole being is wrapped around this one person, and then that person dies. Mm-hmm. What is your value then?
If you haven't figured that out, you're in trouble.
Exactly. So if you haven't figured out that that you are your own person, that you can have your own things, you can say no to the person that is taking from you. Then when that person leaves, a person, you know, dies or just decides to take off or whatever, you will internally feel like you have no value because that person is no longer there. Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the hardest, I will always say this to the day I die, the hardest thing I've ever had to do was turn my back on Alex. Mm-hmm. When he resurfaced again after being gone for 6 months and says, "Mom, I need to get help again." And he'd already been in like 5 rehabs and, you know, in and out, and he resurfaced. And for me to be on the phone with him and said, "I love you, but I am not going to love you to death, and I will not help you out," and turn my back on him. I didn't know at that moment if I was going to get a call, you know, several weeks down the line to come identify his body. You know, I didn't know if that was going to be him calling to say, "Hey, Mom, I'm all clean. I did what I was supposed to do." I didn't know what the outcome was going to be. But to let go of that control that I thought I had and say, it's okay for me to say no, was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life. And I've done a lot of hard things in my life, you know, but that was the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. And as of today, it is the most thankful thing I've ever done because I set those boundaries.
Yeah.
And thankfully, he's got 4 years clean and sober. And, you know, he ended up finding a rehab. He ended up going to rehab on his own. I didn't have to go, you know, try to find some place for him to take off. You know, I didn't have to do any of it. He knew what my boundaries were and he didn't cross them. Mm-hmm. You know, so it can be done. It is something you have to be able to do. And you have to be okay to ignore what other people say. Because, of course, at that time, you know, well, it was prior to that, but one of the times that he was in rehab and I would tell my mom, it was before she had passed away, I would tell her, "No, Mom, I cannot continue to keep putting him in a rehab." And then it was like, "Yeah, but what kind of mom turns their back on their kid? And you can't do that. He's asking for help." Because my mom didn't really understand the power of addiction. Luckily I did. Even though my mom had been part of addiction with my father for so long, but it was just something that she felt she had to help, you know, which in turn, codependency can come from how you were raised, which now hindsight being 2020, my mom was codependent on us, therefore I was very codependent on, you know, my kids and my ex-husband and stuff like that. So you're if that person ends up dying or whatever, you know, your sense of value is no longer there because you think all your value is based on this one person. You are now stuck trying to figure out who you are.
Mm-hmm. You know, the question again always comes back to is, you know, where do you cross the line between enabling and helping, you know? Mm-hmm. And again, I've dealt with this with a lot of families over the years. You know, I've been in the industry, in the substance use industry for, you know, 19 years. Years or whatever, you know, so I've worked with a lot of families over the years. And I'm also somebody that is very, you know, open and honest with people when I see something that's in danger. And I have told families that you're killing your kid, you know? And, you know, and the difference being, you know, like, again, where do you cross that line? And the sad part, and we'll say this again, the sad part is people will continue losing kids, but do you want to be a part of it? That's the question I think that really needs to be asked, you know, is that, you know, you can step back, you can allow pain to maybe hopefully take them and change them, or you can physically actually be a part of killing them. And that's really where it comes down to, you know. I think the most important thing is, you know, if you are helping to a point to where it's negatively affecting you, that's when there's a problem.
Right. And if you're not setting those boundaries, if you're doing things that you would normally not do for anybody else, you know, and you're afraid to say no to that person and you're making excuses for that person, that's enabling, right? That's that cover up, you know, like the mom who doesn't want to let the world know that their kid has an addiction, or they want to have this like pretty picture, this white picket fence and this, you know, everything is perfect in my family. There's no problems. There's no, you know, whatever. But behind closed doors, there's abuse, there's drug addiction. There's something that's happening because they don't want to face the facts. And they want to have this appearance of grandeur that, you know, everything's perfect. And just so you all know, there is no such thing as a perfect family.
Yeah.
You know, we've all have our struggles.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and that was, you know, the chapter that I wrote this in was called Letter of Voices Echo. And it was based on this premise that, you know, we have all this addiction out there. We have all these deaths. I mean, we looked at it last year. There was close to, you know, about 90,000 Americans that died of an overdose of some form, with the majority being opiates in 2020, which is a huge number. You know, that's, we always say that that's, you know, almost 40,000 more people that died of that that year than people that died in the Vietnam War.
Yeah. And I mean, and that is a true epidemic. I mean, that is really what, you know, we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, we've got, you know, obviously COVID and things like that and, you know, all these people dying, but we can't forget about the substance abuse issue that's going on, because that's killing people in record numbers also.
Well, and substance abuse even went up during this pandemic.
It did. It did. I mean, you know, you sit around, do nothing, and
what else?
Might as well get loaded, right?
Get loaded, yeah, for sure.
And, but yeah, I mean, this is, you know, in the chapter that I wrote, Let Our Voices Echo, it was really based on that premise too of that, you know, we need to come together. We need to let our voices, we need to talk about these things. You know, if you have a, and I know a lot of people don't do this, but and I've been to numerous funerals, you know, people that died, and there's never any talk about it. You know,
right.
I think, honestly, I believe that it would be so powerful if people would, I mean, you don't have to talk down to the person, but the person had some issues, you know, drug abuse, dependency, things like that impacted and had an impact on this person dying, you know, maybe it can help somebody.
Right.
And then we can actually turn that person, and that way he doesn't have to die in vain.
Right. Because you use his story as a guide to help others.
Yeah. And we have people out there, Jody Barber, you know, Jody, if you're listening out there, you know, you are that amazing woman who let your voice echo, you know, and we do have a lot out there, you know, that have come forward and are fighting, you know, to help people.
Right. Well, we're doing it just by having this show and talking about our own experiences to help others, because that's really what this all boils down to, right? Is.
Yeah. We don't have to do this alone.
We don't. Yeah. Well, you are, you know, people who are dealing with codependency, people that are dealing with, you know, feeling like they're isolated because they're the only ones with that certain problem. You're not. There's so many of us going through the same struggles and the same questions that we have. And that's really why we'd love to hear you guys call in and, you know, tell us some of your own stories. Let's talk about it. Let's see what you are thinking, right? And I know not everybody likes to call in, so again, I have, you know, my message book up here. You guys can send us a message through LA Talk Radio, and we can really help try to answer your questions and kind of give you some examples of what we went through in certain situations.
Yeah, we love to, you know, if people have questions, if people have insight, or they just, you want to tell us what you were thinking.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, it's really important that,
because that's what this is. I mean, this is the collaborative effort. You know, that's what this whole thing is to bring people together, stories together. You know, my High Wall Clean podcast, you know, is where I have, you know, people come on, share hope, share stories, you know, let people know that, you know, great things can happen. You can be good no matter where you've been or what you've done. You can do anything you want if you're willing to fight for
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the problem is, and in relationships with back to codependency enabling, is there in these kind of addiction what was it? Relationship addictions, you know, you have the giver and you have the taker. The taker's going to continue to take, and the giver is going to continue to give even when they have no more to give.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. So that's when you have to start to take a look back and be like, who am I? Really, really ask yourself, who am I without this person? Mm-hmm. And that is what I did with my ex-husband, was really say, who am I if I'm not the one constantly bailing David out? Mm-hmm. And why am I not worthy enough to have my own things and take care of my own life?
Yeah.
You know, we forget in the relationship, it's a partnership, not a mother, mm-hmm. you know, father type relationship.
Yeah. The statement I put on that thing, you know, that parents sacrifice, right, their time, their energy, and their existence to focus on another person and to raise that person to the best of their ability. But unfortunately, right, the person that has been focused on tends to lack any appreciation and feels entitled mm-hmm. to where they nail their parents to a cross
right.
for that excruciating sacrifice.
Right.
You know, so I don't know, use the metaphor, but you know, if the parents can get off the cross, right, they can learn good things, right? That was saying, you know, get off the cross, we need the wood.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the other things is, you know, again, and this is, we talked about this with, you know, the control that we think we have over our children and stuff like that. What we have to do is we have to remember that our children, the only job that we were given when we had children was to make sure we try to rear them straight,
mm-hmm.
right? But they're going to make mistakes. They're going to
make their own decisions.
They're going to make their own decisions, yeah. right? And at some point, you've got to say, okay, you know, you are an adult now. You make your own decisions. I'll be here to help guide you if you ask. You know, but I'm not going to bail you out of every situation, because mm-hmm. if not, they're not going to learn how to bail themselves yep. out. And so yep. once that giver is gone, they don't know how to take care of themselves. Yep. So we've talked about that.
Yeah. Before. And one of the greatest qualities of codependency is blame,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this is something that I've seen a lot of, you know, with people that, you know, want to you know, with the codependent aspects that, you know, when I worked at that program in Newport Beach, you know, I had a mother, and I think this was actually the one that I'd said, you know, you're killing your kid. And the kid total was in the program for 6 months, 3 months, and then left, and then came back, had relapsed, came back for another 3 months. And you know, and I'd had this conversation, and then the kid left, the kid died. And you know whose fault it was? Mine.
Oh, of course, the mom blamed you, yeah.
I actually got numerous blaming messages, you right. know, from the mother that apparently was my fault.
Yeah.
And luckily, I didn't take responsibility for it, because it ain't my fault.
Right.
You know?
You have no control
over it. And it's not the mother's fault.
No,
it isn't. I mean, technically, you know, sure, you can say that, yeah, they were enabling, but, you know, one thing that we teach clients all the time is it is, you know, you make choices, you make decisions, and you're going to pay the price no matter mm-hmm. what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's very important, you know, again, to remove ourselves from the blame game,
mm-hmm.
blaming everybody else. I kind of talked a little bit about, you know, Al-Anon, and Al-Anon has those three C's, right, where they say you didn't cause it, you can't cure it, you can't control it.
Right.
But I always kind of flip that around, you know, in the concept of, you know, you did cause the suffering within you.
Right.
Right. And you can cure yourself
mm-hmm.
and you can control yourself.
Right. Right.
Because that's what this is about.
That's the only thing you can do. Right.
That's it. Is
for yourself. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have pain, and it saddens me when I know that somebody's suffering not because of something they did,
mm-hmm.
but because the person they've been taking care of for so long continues to hurt them, continues to, you know, and then their feeling of unworthiness and all that other stuff that goes with that. And, you know, I ended up leaving my ex-husband because I finally started to realize it was time for me to take care of me and my kids and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I was no longer going to allow this person to just suck all the energy out of me. Right. And at the end of the day, you know, we've been divorced about 10 years now, something like that. He's now living on the streets, you know, meth addict on the street with some, you know, girlfriend of his and whatnot, and has completely abandoned his children and all that other kind of stuff. And for a glimpse there, just for a second, I almost blamed myself because I was like, see, I knew if I left him, this was going to end up, this is how it's going to be. And now my kids are suffering and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I had to pull myself back and be like, oh, no.
That's a lot of years for that separation to finally take blame for something that he.
No, I mean, he was kind of going downhill from day one. But, you know, this is now where he's at now. But I noticed, and you can even attest to this, I kept bailing him out of situations money wise and stuff like that because of within the last 10 years. Right. Because I was like, I cannot let my kid's father be on the streets. That right there is a codependency thing right there. I was still codependent on making sure that my kids were going to still be able to see their dad and that their dad was taken care of. But yet he is 6 years older than me and completely should have been able to take care of himself and be able to still see his kids and, you know, whatever. And so taking on that responsibility was something I was still doing even well after the divorce. Mm-hmm. I was with you. We were married and I was still trying to bail him out.
Absolutely.
You know?
Hey, we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor.
Okay.
People I love lost faith in me. I lost faith in me and I lost my faith. I lost hope. I tried AA, but it just wasn't enough. I needed something that would help me for the rest of my life. I needed a nurturing environment that would help me understand what I was running from. His House New Creation gave me that. I found purpose, meaning, ultimately a career helping others. Recovery is a process, and I'm grateful for the journey His House New Creation helped me discover. True recovery really does begin at His House.
Yes, there is hope. There is hope.
There's always hope.
You know, the flip side
even when
on...
you think there's none.
Right. You know, one thing I teach to my students that are working to become counselors, and I've also talked to clients about this before too, you know, is that flipping priorities. So even in the sense that, okay, I love my kid. I love this person. I want to take care of this person. How do you do that? Well, even in a just a generalized concept, I need to flip that around and take care of myself because for me to help anybody else, I need to be taking care of myself,
right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, I teach that with, you know, again, for the counselors and stuff, that your number one priority is clients, right? That's our main job, is to look out for the best interest of our clients, right? And then you've got your organization, your certification, yourself, right? But for prioritizing, I need to take care of myself, even though your job is to look out for the best interest of your client. But above that, you need to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And your job is not about you.
No.
You know? And it isn't about you at all. But that's the order that you have to turn things around to. Mm-hmm. So even if you want to be codependent, and you want to be a great codependent, right? And you want to really take care of yourself first. Mm-hmm. Get yourself good, because then you can be a fantastic codependent. Although, if you really took care of yourself first, you're not going to want to be a codependent.
Right. Nobody ever says, when I grow up, I want to be a codependent, right?
Yeah. Well, because that's, you know, the taking care of ourselves is, you know, it's about loving ourselves, caring about ourselves, doing what's best for us. And, you know, if you look at it from the parental standpoint, because again, the truth being, sadly, people are going to lose kids.
Yeah.
People are going to lose family members from, you know, whether it be drug addiction, COVID, I don't know, you know, different, you know, things, but, you know, people are going to die. And so you want to make sure that you're in a place to where you can continue to move on. You know, I think I had told this story before in one of them, but when I was in high school, young, maybe, yeah, I think it was high school. We had, there was a guy I knew who had been drinking and driving, and he was driving on the freeway, went off an overpass, and died in the accident, and it destroyed his family. So it was to the point to where the, you know, like the father lost his job. They got into fights. They ended up divorcing. They lost her house, everything.
Yeah, I remember you telling me this story.
And so, you know, that's the things that is, it's unfair. I mean, if you think about it from that standpoint, it's unfair, you know, for your decision to destroy somebody else's life.
Right.
Especially your parents.
Right.
You know? So that's why, you know, again, it is so important just to you be in that place to where I'm okay. No matter what, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be able to get through it no matter what happens because I don't have control over that other person.
Right.
Stop being God.
Right, right. Even though we already know God gave us a gift of choice. Yeah, I mean, I think that line between, you know, codependency, enabling, and helping is just such a blurred line sometimes for some people because they forget that they don't have that control. And then and so you know, being able to really admit to what is my worth, who am I without this person in my life, and not saying that you got to get rid of the taker, right? You don't got to get rid of them, but you've got to set those boundaries. Right? You've got to be able to identify what your boundaries are and say, I'm not going to continue to do this with you. Okay? And once you set those boundaries, sticking to them. Because if you keep breaking those boundaries and you keep going, okay, well, this one time, you know, I'll go pick you up at the bar after I've told you I wasn't going to pick you up at the bar anymore and you're totally drunk or whatever. You know, and then you keep going and you keep doing, then you keep breaking it, then of course they're going to keep doing it. Why not?
You're not going to do anything.
Right.
And that's that's the premise of a boundary, you know, is a boundary, you know, is where, you know, we set a rule in a sense, you know, I get to tell you how I feel, what you're doing, what I need you to do. And if you don't do it, this is what I'm going to do, the consequence. And don't ever set one that you're not willing to follow through on.
Absolutely.
You know, so even if it's something that you think is good and important, don't say it unless you're willing to do it.
Right.
You know, because, yeah, then you're not going to have any, they're not going to, you know, you could say anything.
Right.
Yeah. You're not going to do anything.
Right. Well, and it's funny because when we were talking about this on the way here and we're talking about the codependency I had with my ex-husband, and then I started to realize how much codependency I had on you during the relapse. And it took me 6 months to finally say, No, I'm not doing this again. It broke my heart because I love you to death, but it was also something I was not going to put myself in a situation where I was constantly going to be bailing somebody out that I loved. Because it wasn't, I knew I had no control over the choices you were making and you had no control over the choices I was making. So it's not always an easy choice to turn your back on somebody you love, especially when you're super codependent as I was. You know, and I actually asked Derek, am I as codependent as I used to be? And, you know, because we have been together for 10 years, or nine years and some change. But, and so, you know.
Damn, that long.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a moment. But, you know, it's interesting because he has seen, you yourself have seen the progression, right?
Drastic changes.
You know.
I mean, you were very codependent,
yeah.
You know, with Alex specifically, and it makes sense. I mean, again, it's the typical mother relationship. I'm going to be there. I'm going to protect him. I don't want anything bad to happen. And that's where things, you know, I mean, you can do everything in the world to help the person. They may die, right? And on the flip side, you can also step aside and let it go, and they may die. Yeah. You know.
And I remember you telling. I remember so specifically you telling me this, and it made so much sense, but it was still so hard to let go. You know, because it made perfect sense. He can die either way. I don't have any control over that. Mm-mm. you know? And so,
but you're going to have a better chance if you're able to put enough pain, you know, in their life. Because again, you got to remember with addiction, addiction is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It is very powerful. And for people that have never been through it, with especially the chemical abuse, it's very powerful. You know, it sits in that survival part of our brain. There's nothing above survival. It's the most important thing in the world. I'm going to die if I don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, even though, I mean, obviously that's not real, but right. It's real to you.
But it's real to you, yeah.
And yeah. So you have to put more pain, or allow, not necessarily put it, but allow more pain, right, to hit them,
mm-hmm.
right, than the pain that it would be to stop.
Right.
Because pain to stop is also going to be there.
Right.
That's where the battle is between this, because it's, you know, it's painful to keep going. You know, and it's painful to stop. And we know the withdrawal stuff, but there has to be an escalated side of pain to seem more painful to continue versus the pain that I'm going to experience through the withdrawal and stopping, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to allow to happen.
Right.
And it's hard. I know it's hard.
Yeah.
You know?
It is difficult, but you know what I tell people sometimes when they're kind of doing this, they're codependent, or, you know, they're just like kind of struggling in a relationship and they're not sure where to go. What I do for moms, especially, say, you know what, put your kid in the situation that you're in, right? So imagine your daughter living the life that you're living. Would you want that for your daughter?
Right.
Or would you want that for your son? Would you want this kind of relationship for your son? Now, I don't advocate divorce. I think that people should fight through their marriage when certain things come up and, you know, that kind of stuff. But when it starts to rob you of who you are, and all you're doing is taking care of your spouse, picking up the pieces, that kind of stuff, you're now lost yourself completely.
Yeah, you're not you.
You're not you anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So if when you put yourself, when you put your loved ones in a situation, your children especially, you know, in the situation that you're living, if you start to go, yeah, I would hate for my daughter or my son to live in this kind of relationship, then that's really kind of an eye opener for you to be like, okay, what? Let me pull back here. Let me see what I have to do to take care of me. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the first things that they say about, you know, how to reduce the codependent tendencies is it's the very first thing. Is becoming your own advocate, like advocating for yourself, knowing what you want, being good to yourself. And we've talked about this several times on the show. It's like
self-acceptance,
loving yourself, finding,
being on your side,
yeah,
being for you,
being your best friend,
yeah,
you know, being okay to be alone,
yes,
right, and know that you're okay.
Yeah.
Right. So that's like the first thing that they say, you know, and just to constantly be taking small steps on setting those boundaries and sticking to them, and knowing that if you set those boundaries and you stick to them, the other person may get upset and may want to blame you and be like, yeah, I got a DUI because you didn't come pick me up at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Right. No, you got a DUI because you were drinking and you decided to drive instead of calling an Uber, and I wasn't going to be your Uber anymore. Right. So setting those boundaries and knowing that whatever you're going to hear back at you for blame is that other person's, mm-hmm. you know, way of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. But that is not true.
And I want to say, too, you know, it's not about turning your back.
No, right? Not at all.
On your loved one. Right.
Right.
But there's a difference between the enabling, you know, and turning your back on somebody, you know, because I can still be there. I could say, I love you. I could encourage you, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to have to do the work though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can give you recommendations and so I'm not necessarily, you know, completely turning my back on the person, but it is again, removing yourself from protecting them from the consequences that they're coming with in their
right.
life.
Right. Which just makes sense. Like, I know I said, I turned my back on Alex. But I did, you know, I said, I don't want to see you. I'm mm-hmm. not going to put you into rehab. This is all on you,
mm-hmm.
you know?
If you change, call me.
If you change, I'm ready to be there when you're ready to accept your behavior and that you're not going to drag me and your brothers down anymore, you know, that kind of scenario.
Which brings up a good point because, you know, when we talk about, for those in recovery, for instance, you know, those that are, you know, have people in their life that are potentially negative influences or people.
Takers.
You know. Drug users, crack dealers.
Yeah, you might want to get rid of them.
But, you know, you can go to them and say, hey, I love you. I care about you. I hope you change. Call me when you get your life together. And
I'll help you get clean.
You know, and that's a very good thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you're not even turning your back on them, but you're just letting them know that, hey, this is just not okay. I don't have to tolerate this stuff. I don't want this in my life. I'm going to take care of myself first. Mm-hmm. Number one priority. And that needs to be everybody's number one priority is you taking care of you.
I honestly feel that if there was more people in the world who took care of themselves first, the world wouldn't be in such a chaos that it is in today, because they're always worried about what everybody else is doing and how they're doing it and, you know, whatever. Just love yourself. Take care of you.
Yeah, I think I'd had when Paxton was here one time, we were talking about the, you know, the difference between selfless and selfish. And that really you need to be selfish first.
Yeah.
And you need to be selfish to be selfless.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, realistically, you have to take care of yourself first. I mean, top priority. Without you being healthy, being good, you know, being confident, you know, having self-respect, self-worth, you're useless.
Right.
You know, and you're not going to really be a great teacher or helper.
If your self-worth is based off of somebody else's behavior and their and how they treat you, then you're no good for anybody else, which especially yourself, you know. So it's you know, we can't advocate that enough. I mean, we've had several shows where we just tell, you know, we're talking to people about just really self-loving, love yourself. And if you are a codependent person and you realize that you are a codependent person and now you're upset with yourself for being codependent, right? Forgive yourself. A lot of the times it was because that's how you were raised. Like I said, I know where my codependency came from. 100% it was my mom. My mom was the one who bailed us all out of situations. She would cover up for my dad if he was drinking, you know, when he would come into his little drunken stupors, you know, she would cover up for her daughters if they did something stupid and wouldn't tell dad. So it was always like she was just juggling all these balls. And my mom was an amazing woman, you know, an amazing woman, but I don't think she valued herself as herself. Her value was based on her family. And so I learned a lot about that, you know, in going into therapy and talking about all this stuff and really realizing where my codependency came from and, you know, not to fault my mom. She probably learned it from, you know, her mom, but my mom was the oldest of seven kids and drunken father. Mom was abused, or, you know, beaten all the time, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. So my mom actually was the one who helped raise those seven kids. Her six siblings. And so I think we talked about the family dynamic. The one that ends up taking care of everybody is the one who ends up living their whole life taking care of somebody.
And never themselves.
Yeah.
And I think the first step for everybody, and I think it's so important, I ask clients to do this all the time, is figure out who you are. Who are you as a person? Not roles.
Right.
You know? I mean, I look at, you know, like for me, I've always felt, you know, everybody, I think I was talking about this with clients today, the question of, like, what's my purpose in life, you know? And I always think that I've sort of defined things that when I do things that feel good, right, and good things happen, I've got to be living within my
purpose
that maybe God had for me, right? When I do things that make me feel angry, hateful, and things don't work out, I'm assuming that I'm not walking in line with what my purpose is.
Right.
And that's why also, you know, we have this a whole other show, Walk a Mile in My Shoes, which is on hatred, mm-hmm. because, you know, and everybody that I see within that is that, I mean, just miserable.
They're very unhappy.
Except
people.
Tommy Chong, you know, but
he's not.
But he wasn't. But yeah, just miserable, you know, people. And so I think I really do. I think a great first step for people is, who are you as a person?
Well, and I think we've said it on the show. I've said it on the show before. I didn't really realize who I was as a person, or I'm still trying to find out who that is after the two older kids left the house.
And it's going to evolve. I mean, that's a lifetime. I mean, things change, you know, priorities change. And, mm-hmm. and so, you know, that who am I question, I think, is an always evolving process,
which
is fun. That's the fun part
yeah. And don't get me wrong. I still love to take care of my family. I still love to, you know, make sure I cook for the family, take care of my kids. Oh, wow, we're already over?
Yeah, can you, you know?
but the thing is, I do it because I want to, not because I feel like I have to anymore. So,
well, we are out of time again. Time flies when you're having fun, right?
It is. Great conversation. And I really hope that people start to continue to do that self-love and self-searching.
Absolutely. And thank you guys all for tuning again to What Were You Thinking? My name's Eric McCoy.
I'm Morella McCoy.
We'll see you next week.
Good night.
You're listening to What Were You Thinking? With Eric McCoy and Morella McCoy, only on LA Talk Radio.